Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome, Andrew Staton, to World of Martial Arts Television, a world you know very well. Wanted to talk to you particularly today as a Bruce Lee authority, it being the 20th of July and it being 50 years since the untimely passing of Bruce. What are your thoughts on how the world is going to be thinking about Bruce and how, what that means in the many decades that have passed since that unfortunate time?
I will, yeah. Great to be on your show. The situation is that, of course, it's a reflection of the past, present, and maybe the future. So let's take a look at the past, really, if that's okay. So the past is on this day in 1973. A lot of people in Hong Kong woke up to the fact that Bruce Lee was dead, and it was a you know, it was an absolute shock to their system because he was their hero. He was the one that was flying the flag for the Chinese people, you know, more than anybody else had in the whole of the world. So to them, it was totally distraught, and the people close to him were totally destroyed. But I'd like to talk about that maybe a little bit later on. But present over the 50 years, there has been an awful lot of misinformation about Bruce's death, and they go on about it, and I don't like to speak too much about it, but it does happen. It does come round to this date, and it's quite funny that a lot of people, even in the business world, you know, you say to them, "Oh, it'd be better to celebrate the groundbreaking launch of Enter the Dragon," and yet they still pull round to, "Oh, well, he died on the 20th of July. I will release something around the death anniversary." And you're thinking, is that something to celebrate? It's like, no, not really in my book. You know, I mean, it's kind of, you know, would you celebrate somebody's death? And I don't actually there. I think it's a part of the legacy, and I think it's a starting of the legacy, because from that day onwards, Bruce did actually become and started building this big following, and in America it started a lot earlier on the release of Enter the Dragon in America, and much later in early 1974 with the British people. We were one of the people that actually just took Bruce to our hearts. And he inspired so many people. So when you ask me about 50th anniversary, what does it hold? It holds a bittersweet sort of like scenario, really. But I don't still understand why we celebrate it, but it is talked about, and people always like to reflect on this day. So yeah, that's how I feel about it.
I suppose it also does, we're talking today, but does coincide with the release of Bruce Lee at Golden Harvest, the release from Arrow Films, which we had some hand in partly, but also is a properly impressive box set. So do you want to talk about that, the box set of Bruce Lee at Golden Harvest?
And the greater things are the Mandarin Cut. The Mandarin Cut, Kung Fu Monthly, now revitalised by Carl Fox. Kung Fu Monthly had a big part to play in that, because nobody actually knew much about the uncut Big Boss until 1979 and the film festival held down in Auburn and stuff like that. And it was absolutely... I remember sitting back to next to a great guy called Dave Langley, and he was going, "You won't have seen this. You won't have seen this." And literally, there was bits in there that, you know, you was like, "Oh, it made it such more a complete movie," and you understood the storyline so much better when you had all these little joining bits in. So, for us to get this edited down version and actually knowing so much about this, what they call the uncut Big Boss, and that it, you know, it, we thought it had gone missing, it was lost. People thought somebody had bought it, a 35 millimeter film had been bought and then had got lost in the archives and stuff like that. But it just went missing, and we thought we'd never see it. And it's absolutely so great to actually see the uncut version, and all down to James Flower and his team for putting it together. It makes the whole film a great understanding of how the Hong Kong people felt when they actually first went to see Bruce in The Big Boss in Hong Kong. Because we didn't, you know, when you see the full film, you get the full flavor of what the film was talking about. And actually, when Bruce talks about it to Ted Thomas in one of his interviews, he goes, you know, there's some, you know, fight scenes in it, there's a group, sort of like a lot of sex scenes in it, and Bruce talks about these things, and you're thinking, well, when you're watching the normal sort of like standard cut, you're thinking, well, I can't make a big fuss of this. But when you see the full complete film, you go, ah, now I see what Bruce is talking about. And you can see why there's so much enthusiasm about the uncut Big Boss. And people have talked about it. I've talked about it. I've written about it. There's a great guy that has an actual website for it, you know, and now it must be absolutely over the moon that this has now been put to bed. I mean, there'll always be the factor that people will turn around and say, oh, well, there's a scene missing from it, you know, the saw in the head scene's missing. Well, yeah, it's missing and it's not there, and, you know, unfortunately we don't know where it is or if it ever, you know, we know it existed because there's so much photographs of it. Was it taken out in early stages? Was it ever there? Did anybody actually see it in Hong Kong? Nobody's actually come out to actually say, yes, I have actually seen it. In my opinion, I haven't heard anybody say that. And until such time as somebody can actually put it in front of me, then I just say, well, so what? We know it existed. We actually see Bruce put his foot on the saw. We see him move. We know he actually picks it up, but actually doing it, nah, it's not there, you know, so that's not going. But on the other hand, you know, there is great scenes with the cart scene, which is now there, and of going the second visit to the brothel and the river scene.
And talking of missing scenes, how about the log scene? And I can remember you telling a story about when you first saw that in Golden Harvest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the other big thing to the box set from Arrow is the shock. And I mean, it is a shock to an awful lot of fans, to the Danny Nasanto, Junyu log scene. I mean, I've only just seen it recently, and, you know, I saw it way back when I went to Golden Harvest in 1982. And I was with H.E. Chu, who was the... there's a story about him, which we might do sometime. But H.E. Chu was the editor of the Star newspaper that didn't always have a lot of good things to say about Bruce Lee and was out to sell newspapers, but I did meet him. And he sat me across the desk and he went... would you like to see, you've seen all the Golden Harvest Studios, would you like to watch a Bruce Lee film? We've got nothing else to say. It was a rainy day. And I do remember it. Hong Kong can be very, very sort of like showery. You know, the kind of the climate there is kind of weird. And it monsoony next minute, rain, next minute sunshine, next minute terrible heat. And so he took me down to this wonderful little Rush's cinema. And he sat me down and he said, "Here, you know, sit in this seat." And the guy was Johnny Lau. And he said, "Oh, you sit there." And he said, "Right, would you like tea and biscuits?" I said, "Oh, yeah, tea and biscuits mean nice." And so he says, "Well, what film do you want to see?" I said, "Oh, I want to see Bruce Lee, The Man, The Legend. It was only shown in 1973 and then withdrawn." He says, "All right." And we rung down and said, "Oh, yeah, we can show you, but it's in Mandarin." I went, "Okay. I'm not bothered. You know, I can understand. I know exactly what Bruce is saying in all his movies." So, you know, I was quite sat in. He says, "Well, you'll be pleased to see where you sat in this little theatre." He says, "Where you're sat is where Bruce Lee sat to watch the Rushes. And here is where, and where Johnny's sitting is where Raymond Charles sat next to him." And at that, I sat like filled up a little bit. I thought, Christ, this is an experience that not many people are going to get. And then I saw this Bruce Lee, The Man, The Legend. Well, for people who are a lot younger than me, what you won't realize is until the 2000s, and thanks to Hong Kong legends and Brian White and Steve Rivers, we were suffered badly from the cuts of all Bruce Lee films. Well, I saw Bruce Lee, The Man, The Legend, and it had every nunchucker scene, and it had every scene that you wanted to see, including a short clip of the Danny Nassantu log scene. So I was like in tears of joy, because I thought, if this ever got released in England, or, you know, and due to the censors, it wouldn't at that time. I thought, wow, you know, this would be amazing. Move on, move on to 2023. And there I'm sat watching with Carl Fox this absolutely amazing log scene, and the full complete set then put together as though it would have been the real film. I mean, and it's just breathtaking. And, you know, you can actually see Bruce, just very, very short, half of a second clip of Bruce directing Inosanto on what he wants, how he wants it doing. Lots of photographs have done this, but not actual footage of Bruce directing, which is where I think Bruce would have gone in his legacy over the years. But the log scene is just beautiful to see, and is a wonder, because what you've got to look at is one of the people who actually kept Bruce's legacy alive is Guru Danny Nassantu. You know, he has been pivotal, and only till recently, the late, you know, Sifu Takekimura, again, another person who was pivotal in keeping Bruce Lee's name alive, and Linda and the rest of the family. But yeah, I mean, seeing Guru Inosanto in action, putting out what he actually loves, which is a Filipino Cali, is just amazing. And, you know, if there's anybody who should be doing a film, I know Diana was always thinking of trying to get a film out with Guru Inosanto. That would be the film to watch next. I mean, a lot has been done on Ip Man, another, you know, link to Bruce Lee. But so much could be said easily. But between two films, one would be the story of Guru Inosanto, and another one that I feel is still misplaced is Wong Chung Lung, a film sort of like dealing with Wong Chung Lung, who in my eyes is the teacher of Bruce Lee. I mean, Ip Man did a bit of it, but Wong Chung Lung was there, and so was William Chung, from my readings and stuff like that. So I think there's a misplace there. But getting back to the log scene, yeah, amazing. And it's great to see the fans, hardcore fans, coming back saying, "Yeah, you know, I'm not really keen on Game of Death, but hey, this is impressive." You know what I mean? And what a great celebration of the legacy of Bruce Lee on his, you know, on an anniversary of today, in a roundabout way, you know, to actually get that out. I would have preferred, and I will stilt my case, I would have preferred it to be in the 19th of August, so celebrating the launch event of the Dragon. But that's just my particular, foible. That's what I would have liked.
And you mentioned Game of Death in our preamble. What did you want to pick up on something about that as well in relation to today?
Game of Death, what an unfinished legacy it is. I always find it funny, and I have a little chuckle to myself when people turn around and go, oh, Game of Death. And I used to speak a lot, and people know of him, and I rate him quite highly in the fact that I spent maybe 20 years talking to a guy called Julian Keane, who went on and on and on about Game of Death. And, you know, I appreciate what he was saying. He was hoping against hope when John Little's film would come out that it would shine all this, you know, new footage on Bruce and, you know, would fill in the gaps. But unfortunately, there's only one person who could have filled in the gap and would have made the film totally what it was, a Bruce Lee thing, was Bruce Lee himself. Nobody can actually see or visualize what Bruce Lee would have done. Because even if you've got all the footage, and yes, there's lots of it and retakes and stuff like that, and when you watch how people are putting films together now, I mean, it's great when you see the making of things like Mission Impossible and stuff like that, where you see Tom Cruise saying, well, we did things like this and then we tried things like that. That's what Bruce did. You know, he was, try this way, let's try that way, let's have a look at this, let's see what. And that gives you a lot of alternatives to how the film would have gone, because he would have sat down then with all the bits and pieces and the completed movie and then put it together. And it would have been a legacy where Bruce would have been showing something that is still lost a little bit and people still forget, is that Bruce was showing, you know, his method of fighting, this art of fighting without fighting, this, you know, using no way as way and having no limitations as limitations. What you've got to look at is Bruce wears a yellow catsuit. He doesn't wear a gi. He doesn't wear, you know, anything traditional. He's freeing himself from everything, adapting to what actually is in front of him. And that's what he was trying to get across with the movie. He was trying to say, don't become a style. Don't become a style, because a style will restrict you. And he was doing it in a movie way. So he was getting his philosophy across in a fantastic way, that he was educating the people to the art of martial arts, as to say, yeah, if you've got a passion for a martial art, and I like a passion for Wing Chun, I wonder why. But the situation is that don't be bound by that system. You know what I mean? And open your mind. You know, that so many martial arts movies that you actually watch, and you can see, and even in Fist of Fury, my style's better than your style, you know, and they all have a clash, and, you know, we can beat you, your teacher is worse than my teacher, and I'll beat your teacher. It's ridiculous. And Bruce knew this from the old Kung Fu movies, and he was going, no, when you're in a fight, when you're in a street fight, I mean, if a guy comes at you with a knife, you're not going to stand there going, where's my sword? You know, because only thing I do is samurai sword, and if I ain't got a samurai sword, I can't do anything. You know, the way of the samurai actually taught you how to fight without a sword. You know what I mean? And was a more complete system. And a lot of them are complete systems, but to learn that complete system, you have to go through everything. And Bruce was saying, you know, sometimes if you want a short circuit, you've got to go in there, learn it, learn what's good for you, and take, you know, the old three things, you know, take what is useful, throw away what is useless, and add what's particularly your own. As to say, if you're a certain weight, certain height, go from there. And Bruce was proving that on Game of Death. And what a shame he didn't get to choose it. And shame that people don't talk about that enough, about Bruce and how he was educating people to the Chinese way, the Chinese way of thinking. He was so proud of being Chinese, so proud of the Chinese people, and he hated the way it was treated in the West. And he converted the West. He converted the West so that we respect the Chinese an awful lot more. And Game of Death would have been one of those films where he would have built on that. But to remember that this was still, Game of Death was still going to be for the home audience, like Jackie Chan does films for the home audience. It wasn't for Hollywood. The three films, Big Boss, Fist of Fury, Way of the Dragon, were not for Hollywood. They were for the home people who understood the Chinese way. You know, his Hollywood films would have been more directed to Hollywood because he knew the Hollywood way. He'd been there. He'd been a product of Hollywood. You know, he'd done The Green Hornet. He'd done several TV series. He'd been on Marlowe. So he knew what Hollywood demanded. And he would have followed very much. If you ever want to see where Bruce would have been today and the legacy of Bruce, look at Clint Eastwood. If Bruce had lived long enough, he would have been not a copy of Bruce of Clint Eastwood, but he would have followed very much in Clint Eastwood's mind, because that's what Coburn and that's what McQueen had said to him. Go do what Clint did. Go away, go to another country, go back to your own country, go make some movies, show them what you can do, and then they'll sit up and they'll jump up and down and say, yeah, we want. And that's exactly what they did with Clint. He went away, made $3 movies, and, you know, continued to make some dollar movies in Hollywood, and then away he went, and nobody's stopping him, and nobody's stopping him today.
Great answer, that, I like that. Andrew, so new fans coming to discover Bruce Lee, where should they start? What should they look for?
I mean, I think that that's a great question, and the situation is 50 years on. If you've not met Bruce Lee before, or you've just been influenced by Bruce Lee, really pick up on the real stuff on Bruce Lee. I mean, if you go to a YouTube channel, go to one where it's got people who actually knew Bruce Lee, like Jesse Glover or James DeMille, Guru Inosanto, Linda Lee, you know, and people who actually knew Bruce. You know, if it's anybody talking, you know, you can actually come to our channel and come to the Walmart TV channel, and there's plenty on there. I mean, we've got Guru Inosanto, we've got Richard Bastillo, you know, and there's lots of stories in there, Chris Kent and stuff like that. All these people are the real people. Try and keep away and read books that are really something to do, or the original books, Linda's book, you know, Bruce Lee's story, you know, anything that's really down to it. I mean, a good starting point is Bruce Thomas's book, Fighting Spirit. I mean, it at least gives you a starting point. And Bruce has done an awful lot of research on that sort of stuff. And keep to them things. Steve Courage's books are absolutely amazing. I mean, he's actually done an awful lot of research and with Darren Chua. And the thing is that you can't miss those kind of publications, because those are well researched, good information, good scenario. And I think barring from the box set, I think soon, if you're watching this channel and you're watching me and with Will, you'll be really, really happy to know there's an actual BBC documentary coming out. I think it's called the 10 pictures of Bruce Lee, Bruce Lee's life in 10 pictures, with Steve Courage and David Tadman. I think that's going to be an absolute must, but because those will be absolutely, they will have researched it. They will not dare do anything that doesn't tell the true story of Bruce Lee and give you some vision. Because what Bruce Lee did for all of us in the 1970s and onward, and people even younger now, is he inspired us to be yourself, to be yourself. Don't become a product, you know, using no way as way and having limitations as limitations. Use it. Use it. Don't be Bruce Lee. Be yourself. Be what Bruce wanted you to be. Be yourself. Investigate everything that you can do. And that takes Bruce's legacy. That's what I've done. If you talk to Will Henshaw, he will tell you that my drive, it comes from that man seeing him on the screen in 1973. You know, when you see him alive, as I always say, he was a Mozart of martial arts, and he put his energy onto celluloid, and that energy keeps bouncing back to you every day you watch it. Even when we've just done an interview with Matt Rutledge, he said it hits you. His persona, everything about Bruce was amazing. So thanks very much, Will. I hope this is the first of a few.
Sports Social Podcast Network.